Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, your definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Gays Revolting.
Oh boy. We're joined by our regular hosts. First up, I have the impressively lifelike Instagram algorithm, Kyle. We're also joined by the creator, founder, and subject of the popular Facebook group I Got Fucked by Thomas Jaspers, and he talked about me on the show. And last but not least, we have the unreadable, untouchable Mikey.
Hey, bitch.
I don't like how you get out of this alive every time, and you're fine.
Because I'm the loveliest.
Whatever. I've seen what you do.
They just don't land, and they don't... How have we all been?
Good things, darling. How are you?
I've been super lonely because everyone I know has left me. My brother's in Italy for 3 weeks and Duncan's like in New Zealand for 2 weeks.
So oh, really?
Someone be my friend. Or substitute boyfriend.
Lucky you've got your billion Instagram followers to keep you.
Okay. Yes. Let's come.
Warm at night. Did everyone have a good Father's Day?
Well,
daddies.
I mean, my family don't really celebrate Father's Day. Like, generally, it's just like a quick lunch.
Yeah.
We should also send a link to our episode before the last one where we talked about our dads.
We also have a great interview coming up with Harry Cook. So if y'all are interested, please stick around to the end.
I love Harry. I'm so excited.
Oh my God.
It's gonna be good.
Harry Cook. Wrote a book.
Love it. Yeah. Save it for the interview, Kyle.
We had a suggestion by one of our Instagram followers this week, which is exciting.
Popular.
In the message that he sent, he was specifically...
telling us to stop doing the podcast.
Please, cease and desist.
Done with it.
Yeah. No, he's one of the guys I've had sex with.
Most likely.
He was saying that it'd be cool if we spoke about how like gay people have like a lot of non-verbal communication. Like he was saying like on public transport, when you see another gay and you're just like,
you know,
I know
public,
you.
Know.
Yeah.
It's like gay sonar.
Gay sonar, that's a really good way of putting it.
Have you guys had those sort of experiences?
Hashtag gay sauna.
Tom, you're projecting. Gay sonar and a gay sauna.
The only non-verbal communication I've had with gays has been at saunas, but no.
Yeah, and you need sonar in those because it's so dark.
Absolutely. Absolutely on public transport because, you know, it's so boring. It's the morning, especially if you haven't had your morning wank.
Yeah.
You're sort of looking around the tram, or if you're not in Melbourne, your bus or whatever other people catch.
I have never caught a form of public transport and not formulated a love story.
A love story between you and, like, you know your kid's name.
Who's and my new husband?
Yeah. Do you ever do the thing where you're on the train and you look at someone, you get a slight look back, and so you open up your Grindr?
Yes, absolutely. And you put the sound on just so that the sound
so they know.
Off. Yeah.
Wow, that's
absolutely
brave.
Yeah.
This is all non-verbal communication.
I also look. I am a sucker for a man reading a book, mainly because
I really
never got past Morris Weitzman. I really like to see what book they're reading.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, doesn't matter what he's reading.
Yeah, I mean, I have to Google
Harry Potter
it. But yeah, absolutely.
they're reading a horoscope book, they're usually gay. Yeah. I find it interesting because it's something that's been a part of our culture for hundreds of years. I think there's a video game that I know there's a video game, but I think I've spoken to you guys about it before, which you can look up, which is actually based about beat culture in London back in the days and about the non-verbal communication. It's an amazing video game. You play a person who the goal of the game is just to give blowjobs in a toilet.
We play different video games. I play like Zelda and shit. Like,
no, you have to check it out because the whole aim of the game is you're in a public urinal.
Yeah.
Men come in and then you have to assess whether...
Decipher
whether they will let you suck their dick or not.
Yeah, okay.
And you do it through a number of ways of eye contact, looking at their penis, checking the surroundings, looking at their appearance and how they're dressed. And it is all historical parts of our culture of how we identified each other before we had the wonderful apps that we now have.
You're totally right. Like, and it is something that's in every facet of our lives. And as anecdotally as it is funny now, it also goes back to the hanky codes and things like that.
Yeah, I was going to mention subtle hanky codes, like all different colors and their meanings.
Yeah,
and
subtle ways of being like, hey, I am. Also, the term gay itself, the way that it went from happy to gay was a code of, are you gay? Oh, yes, I'm gay. Okay. And, you know, those sorts of things.
Gay as hell.
Even like looking at characters like Mr. Humphreys from Are You Being Served, that kind of a side comment. And you're saying a sentence that would be perfectly normal if it was delivered in a certain way, but it means just something else when it's delivered. Yeah, yeah. We do have a lot of codes and things.
Oh, the toe tapping.
Toe tapping.
Under the stall?
Under the stall.
And wasn't like having
our own Morse fucking code. We are an organized people.
I've never heard of that.
Is it next level, bitch?
So like, is it like beep, 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 beep? Because that would be with Luke. SOS.
Yeah.
If you're in a public toilet, I've had someone tap me before.
Shut up.
And like, I was...
Oh my God. And you're reaching for the toilet paper and it just like...
No, and like their foot sneaks in and it's like tap, tap. And I was just like... I have never experienced this before.
Did you have sex?
No, I didn't. I was just like, I'm on my way to somewhere. This is a quick pit stop.
Did you wait to see who it was?
Don't call it a pit stop. That's grotesque.
Yeah.
No,
it was.
I didn't have the time to, but I was just like,
have you
oh
ever
my
done
God,
an understall? Ever had a little understall fun?
No, I'm not a public person.
Anyone?
Not into it.
No, Jesus.
I've had sex in toilets, but not with strangers.
For a very short period of time, I went to the gym.
The gym.
For about 3 months. The game. And I did. It wasn't as subtle. A dick just appeared under the stalls.
Oh, really?
But like, what would this person do if you weren't actually gay and you just like stomp on it? Like,
I just jerked it off and then that was it.
Wait, for real? Did you see what they look like?
No.
God, man.
It was a fantastic.
Okay. What if it was attached to a hideous, hideous person?
Well, I didn't see them, so it doesn't matter. I just it was a lovely dick and I jerked them
anonymous
off.
Anonymous penis.
And, you know, good. They had the confidence to stick it under the stall.
That's confidence. That's like, that's sexy confidence.
For all they knew, I was an ugly person, you know.
What about when people would have like a piercing on one side of their Well, I always forget which one's what. I
think
have
that's
two.
Still a, I mean, a lot is of people still, still
well, like an eyebrow piercing or like an ear piercing. Yeah. And one means you're gay, one means you're straight.
I mean, it's not so much like, secret anymore, but I think it's still definitely a thing. Most straight guys wouldn't get their...
Is it the right side?
Yeah, I used to...
So is it just any piercing on the right side of your body or something? Because like,
I think
I've heard it with
eyebrows,
ears...
I used to have my right nostril pierced and I chose to get that one done because it was a gay thing to do.
I used to have my left side of my lip pierced. I don't know what that
is. Of course you had a lip piercing.
It was
schoolies.
It was the first rebellious thing I did.
And you got your fake little spaces in now. It's so cute.
I see other thing I just thought of is in this modern age, do you ever do the sort of Facebook, Instagram stalk to determine whether someone's gay?
Oh, you see who they're following.
Checking who their friends are, what they follow, and then any hint of RuPaul. Or that specifically in Melbourne, I think there are a few key gays that are mutual friends with almost
Well, there's I mean, the gay culture, the gay community is like so Facebook networks now. I'll have like colleagues start and I'm like, I wonder if he's gay or not.
Yeah.
And I'll go to their Facebook profile and there'll be, if there's 40 mutual friends, like, oh yep, he's if there's two, I'm like, oh no, that's not,
which is also non-verbal. The only like outlier or like exception to that rule would be my best friend JB, who is mutual friends with more gay men than I am.
What's what was his Tinder profile thing again? His like bio,
his Twitter bio is Luke's straight best friend. But I've had a few like gay friends come up to me and say my mutual friends feed is just homosexual men and JB
all
the time, and he's lumped right in there. When doing all of our standard non-verbal homosexual testing, JB is the one you got to watch out for because he'll trick you.
Yeah.
He's a tricky one. He'll show you all the signs, but he ain't buying.
So a bit of a sad topic. And a poignant one. We had Wear It Purple Day a couple of weeks ago. For those of you who aren't aware, who are listening, Wear It Purple Day is started in 2010 as a day for adults mainly, but also for younger people as well, to wear the colour purple. Mm-hmm. And it's to show a sign of support for young LGBTIQA plus people.
Yeah.
So, you know, by wearing a little bit of purple that day, if a kid who identifies who's read about it sees it, they know that you care about them.
When, what day is it? Sorry, when is it?
The 31st of August.
Oh,
so a couple of weeks ago, but it is a poignant time that that has just happened because we also just saw this story about this 9-year-old in America who committed suicide from bullying. His name was Jamal Miles. During the holidays, had come out to his mother, and she said, his mother Leah, when he came out to her, they were in the car, they were driving along, and he physically cowered when he was telling her.
So
it was obviously something that had eaten him up so much, and he'd been so scared of telling her that he had a physical reaction to telling her. And of course, she embraced it, and she said, you know, I love you, and that's absolutely fine, all that sort of stuff. And so they talked about it through the holidays, and he decided that he was going to come out when he went to school
because he wanted to.
He really wanted to tell. All his friends went to school, and 4 days into the school term, committed suicide. So his mum found him at home.
Yeah,
and it's fucked. It's really, it's really so awful fucked. That kid, 9-year old kids. 9-year old
kid.
For me, as we've discussed, the marriage equality debate was a really important thing, not for us.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously a nice thing for us to not be able to get married, but we lived through that. It is for these kids, because how can you expect kids to stop bullying when they see their politicians?
Yeah.
And it's not just LGBTI stuff. It's the way that politicians talk about people of color and women and everybody.
Yes.
If they're discriminating, of course, kids are going to see that. They're going to mimic that, and they learn that shit.
Exactly. Because they see that as, oh, these adults can bully.
Yeah.
We can do the same thing. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, if Scott Morrison can say all this shit about people, then why can't I? Like, you know, it's really fucking awful.
I find it so heartbreaking that a 9-year-old
can have those thoughts.
Like that he is brave enough to come out at his age. Like, holy cow. Like, he was so brave, and he had that response, and he was so proud, and he wanted to tell the people at school, and then for it to just completely go the other way, and just it's...
And yet we're the ones, us campaigning for equal rights, the ones that are told that we're the ones that are ruining kids' lives. It's like, no, this kid...
Nah.
Hold up.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this is America, but things like safe schools in Australia, it is exactly designed for kids like this.
That's right.
And it's not to teach them that they're okay. They know they're okay. It's to teach the other kids that they're okay.
So I think a really important part of this argument is about younger generations of LGBT people, because a lot of the comments about this incident have been that obviously it's a very young person. How does someone that young have such strong feelings of their identity and who they are, and how do they know these things so early in their life? Yeah. Like we've all said here, the focus is wrong. The focus needs to be shifted, because it's not about whether the kid knew what he was or what he wanted to do or what. It's about what the other kids...
That they hated him so much.
Knew.
They tormented him.
That they knew at 9 years old to victimize and bully someone for being different. And that's the real issue here, is not that a kid at nine was exploring his identity or his sexual identity. It's that 9-year-olds had learnt to focus in on that. I remember being in primary school before I'd hit puberty, so I didn't even know what gay or straight was.
Yeah.
And getting picked last every time for PE, for soccer, whatever. And I asked the kids, you know, I said, why do I keep getting picked last? And they said, it's because you're a poofter. It's because you're gay. And I was like, no, I'm not. And I said that from a point of genuine truth, because I hadn't reached that stage of development. I wasn't, hadn't even hit puberty. I was like, I know what being gay means because I've seen Priscilla. And I'm not that. But the other kids had already learnt how to pick on someone that is out of the pack mentality,
and the important
so to speak.
Thing in that sentence is learnt. Like, that is not something you're wrong with. That is something it's that taught. You that, are taught, whether it's from your family or from the media or from the news, which, you know, kids are exposed so much more to now than we were, because it's a 24-hour cycle. a lot of it is from our leaders, I genuinely believe, yeah.
And the thing, like, kids have access to technology now, whereas we didn't back then, so it's more prevalent in their lives. They've all learned to be prejudiced against
and they're learning it earlier. Different. And it also means in a lot of cases, and I don't know if it was the case for Jamal, but it means the bullying often follows them home as well. It's not just something that happens while they're at school for the five days a week.
Because I remember being in primary school and, like, it never followed you home.
You got home, you're in a safe space. With mum and dad, you have the TV.
Absolutely. And then I remember getting to high school, and that's when, like, MSN was a really big thing, and, like, chat rooms started becoming a really big thing. And, like, that was my first experience of, like, online bullying for being gay. And I can't imagine what these younger people are going through, that it's from the get-go now. There was no safe space. Like, it's everywhere.
That was such a big wake-up call for me as well, because I was thinking that, like, in Western culture and everything, that kids nowadays are, like, really lucky because they are more accepted and it's a lot easier for them than it was maybe for us and, like, for people, like, older than us. Yeah, to hear stuff like that, that it is still happening.
Yeah, I guess there's two sides to it, isn't it? Like, in a way, they are lucky because there is, you know, a lot of progression happening. But in another way, there's a lot more conversation about it. And this is what the argument about the postal vote was all about.
Yeah.
We don't need to have more conversations about this because you're just going to give power to a voice of people that, that do hate the LGBTI community. So a lot of kids are sitting at home watching these debates happen in many facets of media and seeing a lot of people that hate them talk about them. And it's
bad. I mean, a 9-year old kid is supposed to be enjoying being a child and not having to worry about all this heavy stuff. For me, at high school, I think that's when I was starting to learn about myself. I never suffered bullying for that. I remember the few, like, token gay kids at school, and I remember seeing how they were treated. When I was coming to terms with who I was, I knew that I didn't want it to be known at school. It would be something after school. I just needed to get through this because I saw how they were treated and it wasn't nice. I never wanted to be lumped in with that. I kind of just wanted to, like, sail through.
Yeah.
And it's not as easy for everybody.
Yeah.
I feel lucky that I did escape without.
Yeah. I think you're really lucky that you were able to see the end of school. Like, a lot of people at school just can't, like, it sounds stupid to us now that we're adults and that we finish school, and school is such an insignificant part of your life as an adult. But when you are a kid going through it, everything. You can't see the end. That's all you know. You don't really have many memories before school, and everything you remember is in your school life.
Yeah.
We talked a couple of weeks ago about my experience at school, and I was only a few years older than Jamal when I was on the 7th school camp and all that sort of stuff. And I remember just not ever seeing an end to this torment. Like, in my mind, it was just going to be forever and ever and ever. And I know, you know, the It Gets Better campaign and stuff is a fantastic attempt at this and a great start to it. But I just wish we could tell kids.
Yeah.
And so many kids are going through stuff at school, whether they're gay or whatever, body issues, all that sort of stuff.
They don't need this on top of it.
Like, I just wish they could, we could get it in their mind. Yeah, there is an end to this.
Yeah.
And yes, it's really intense right now, and it does get better straight after.
It absolutely does. Like, I ended up dropping out of school because not only was I struggling with bullying, but I was just like, I just can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in an environment that isn't healthy. Yeah. I can't do anything about it. And so I left early and started my career as a hairdresser. And like, when I finally did it, I was like, okay, it's not that bad anymore. Mm. Things are much better than it was. And I would love to be able to tell students, be like, this is about to end. Yeah. The rest of your life will begin after this. If
you
knew that,
then do you think you would have stayed? Or are you...
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No. Mm. Because I hadn't experienced what I have now. Yeah. It was because that was it. That's all I knew. It was school and being bullied every day and hating life and just being like, I'm done with this.
And you couldn't have that experience at school.
No.
Like, it's just not the environment for it. And as much as we do have conversations about it now and it is much more prevalent for people to talk about bullying, I think it's an intrinsic human thing with our insecurities, especially having a bunch of children going through a lot of developmental transitions in their life, that bullying is just like a natural thing that is going to spring out of that. And people need to be better equipped to teach kids about how to deal with it, how to not bully. I will fully admit, from my experiences of being bullied without even knowing the reason why, and then figuring out the reason why, my attitude shifted when I got into high school and the later years of primary school, that I realized I had to be a bully to get through. Like, it's intrinsic in the system, and I became a very nasty person, specifically towards other children that were not within the norms, because it was a eat or be eaten sort of environment. I'm not proud of that. I'm not happy with myself for doing that, but there was no support in those situations and there was no training provided. Safe schools, I think, was a great opportunity for us to have that for kids, because I think we have to be realistic that bullying is never going to go away. But support provided for victims of bullying and the lessons that we try to teach kids that are being bullies.
I don't know. That I see what you're saying by never going away, but kids are socially so much more connected and smarter and mature now than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And as we've said, when you get into adulthood, that bullying, I mean, people are still nasty, but there's not that in the workplace. You don't have that strong, overpowering bullying environment that school has. I'm not saying it's not there at all, but I feel like at school it's a bit, it's way more intense. And maybe, you know, as kids are getting more mature and more socially aware.
Yeah, that's really kind of what I was saying. Like, I don't think it will be as poorly handled and as widely spread, but I definitely think workplace bullying is a huge issue.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because those mindsets, which are so tied to human insecurity and our psychological makeup as people, that it's a hard thing to ever say, this will never exist. People will always be insecure and lash out and look to undermine each other and alienate, etc. But we can only hope that the tools are given to children to be able to identify it and be provided the support, especially in our circumstances, to know that this is a short-term thing.
I remember in high school, there was one kid that did end up committing suicide because he came out. Like, all my friends and I, we had all sort of created a network between us because we all were just like, fuck this. Like, this sucks. We're all being bullied for being gay. And there was always this one kid that I sort of, like, I saw around the school and I was just like, I wonder if he is. And I remember one minus I went to, I saw him there and I was just like, oh, hi. Like, it's really nice to see you here. And he's just like, oh, yeah, it's my first time. And I was like, cool. And within a month, he had committed suicide and it was really quite a shocking thing to go through in high school. None of us had ever experienced it, and I'd spoken with my friends about how they'd felt, and like a couple of them had considered it before, and then when that happened, it was just the most mind-blowing thing.
How did your school deal with it?
So the school held a service for him. He had left a note to his parents. It had pretty much just explained that he was done with the bullying and he couldn't handle it anymore. And so, the school held a service for him that everybody could go
to. Do you think that your school offered the support, like, needed by everyone? Like, do you think that, like, it was, everyone had access to that kind
after
of stuff?
After that event, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, the school stepped it up.
Yeah,
like, that's 'cause they were just like, we obviously haven't done a good enough job here to support our students, especially our LGBTQIA people. That particular school has definitely become a well-known gay school now, which is quite good down the peninsula. A lot of gay students transfer there.
Do you think that would have, like, sparked it? Like, that event?
I think so. Yeah, I put it in motion. I think so. They became a performing arts school, which is really cool. And yeah, they're doing really amazing work now.
If anyone listening to this podcast is feeling really affected by some of the stuff we've talked about in this segment, or if you just really feel like you need to chat to somebody, please do have a look at the numbers that we have listed in our show notes. You can give them a call. There's some wonderful support lines there.
Well, it's interesting, and I think it leads into a bigger discussion, especially about mental health in the LGBT community. A lot of listeners know I work in mental health, and it's something I'm passionate about. And I encourage all of our listeners to do research into the topic, because there's a lot out there and it's really useful as well. It kind of, it demystifies it. It also connects you to the rest of our community, and it lets you know that what you were going through or what you were feeling, you're not alone, for one, and that it's not abnormal as well. So a really useful report that I recommend anyone at home can Google is called A Closer Look at Private Lives, and I will post it in our Facebook group as well. basically looking into all aspects of our mental health, the relationships we have, tied into the last thing, the suicide rates are 4 or 5 times the national standard for our country.
Yeah.
And even looking into the effects it has on the trans community as well is way off the chart. So I've got into working with mental health because I struggled with it a lot.
Yeah.
I was an extremely introverted person that hated social interaction. I had a lot of self-loathing, a lot of internalized homophobia, a lot of body issues. It pushed me to a place where it became clear to me that if I didn't do something about it, I wouldn't be around for much longer. And it was years and years of built up unhealthy habits and thinking habits. And thank God for JB, who's spent many nights listening to me cry over episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race and figuring out how we can stream things from the ER room and stuff like that. What really worked for me and has kept me healthy and happy and social and all those things is being able to really analyze the conversations I have with myself. They're the conversations that I found were doing the most harm, were the voices saying, you're not good enough, you're an ugly piece of whatever, people hate you, you know, all of those conversations. And I would visualize and lay them out on the table whenever I was really down and go, what's telling me I'm not talented? What's telling me I'm ugly? What's telling me I'm fat? Point them out and go, which one of these is not me? Which one of these voices are actually something else telling me to feel that kind of way? And what do they get from saying that? And it took me a really long time to realize none of those voices were me. They were things my father had said to me. They were things that really bad partners had said to me. But in my mind, my voice had repurposed them. Mm. And it felt like I was saying it to myself. And so I believed them.
That's really cool. I like that. It's not something that I would have ever thought to do.
Did someone teach you that? Or like, is it something you just kind of worked out on your own?
I'm a visual thinker. Yeah. And I was actually watching, it's really stupid, but I was watching a lot of Hannibal.
Wow. Okay. This went.
Yeah.
This went the other way.
With that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I realized that my depression and my anxiety was a lot like Hannibal Lecter. He was someone that got inside people's heads and made them think.
Have you eaten
they
today?
Were thinking.
I just need to know that. I'm just inching my chair away from you.
And I realized, oh, he's this kind of mastermind. And for a lot of people, depression is a mastermind. It tricks you into feeding it. It tricks you into putting you at risk of further depressive episodes.
Yeah.
It isolates you.
Inner saboteur.
It's your inner saboteur.
Not to bring everything back to RuPaul.
Yeah, sorry to trigger you, Pearl. But
if that camera's not rolling.
But it made me realize from watching that show so much, I was like, that's the same role depression plays in my life. It tries to fuck you over by making you think it's your idea. Yeah. But it's really, if you can separate it from you, you can really free yourself.
I think things that happen with my mental health, like I've dealt with a lot more anxiety in my life than I have depression. I've definitely have depressive episodes. I had quite severe depression in my very early 20s. I've suffered with very severe body dysmorphia to this day. But I think things that really helped me through those is, especially with my body dysmorphia, I work in hairdressing. So I look at myself all day fucking long and I tear myself apart.
Right.
And when I get home, like I have mirrors in my room, but I cover them. So like I do not see myself whatsoever. I try my best not to look at myself in mirrors because that way I'm not staring at my face or staring at my body thinking this is wrong and that's wrong, trying to remind myself to love myself at the same time and just be a lot more kinder to myself when I am in a space where I'm just like, I fucking hate everything. And also with my anxiety, I've found over the years, my diet plays a big role in it and my exercise does. And that's not for everybody, but that's just specifically to me. But a big thing that helps is I found guided meditation is the best thing for me because it just shuts down everything that I'm thinking about. I listen to a single voice that's just like, just chill the fuck out. Everything's okay. It's fine.
Do you use apps for that?
I generally will download different YouTube videos and meditations and stuff. So I found that's been very, very handy for myself, which has been great.
Because that's the other thing too is like, I found that voice would tell me not to eat. Or to eat really poorly.
Yeah.
And that was another one I had to separate out, because I realized if my body isn't nourished, if I'm not feeling physically well, the mental space is affected by that. And where is that voice coming from telling me not to eat?
So I'm not really, my mental health state is not something that I'm really good about talking about, and definitely not something that I'm ready to talk about on this podcast. But the one thing that I can, the thing that I'm doing to try and make it better is talk about it more. You know, I do comedy. Like, I'm really good at going out on stage and laughing and pretending like my life is amazing and all that sort of shit. And I'm really good at lying to friends and colleagues and family members and stuff, and making everybody think that it's really, really good when it's not. So the one thing that I've really been concentrating on lately is talking to people more about it. And I find that easier to do when I'm feeling good. And what I've realized is by doing that, then my friends know that it's not always good. So if I, when I'm feeling good, I'm honest and say, look, I sometimes have weeks where I will lie to you and tell you that I can't possibly catch up, but I'm spending 3 days in bed, doing nothing, not showering, not getting out of bed. And so what I have found in the last several months is by forcing myself to talk to friends about it when I'm feeling good, they know that when I'm coming up with reasons why I can't do stuff, to check in a bit more and force me to sort of be a bit more honest and talk about it a bit more when I'm not feeling that good.
That's good.
Me personally, being Kyle, that's who's speaking right now. Everyone who's had an issue. So yes, me, Kyle, speaking. My biggest hang up, I would say, and I think a lot of people would say, would be my self-confidence. I really struggle with it. It's something that I'm constantly working on. I think I have come a long way.
Yeah.
But it's this whole thing of living in constant fear of like people not thinking anything I'm saying is interesting, and like not even wanting to like finish a sentence because I'm like, no one's listening anyway.
Yeah,
it's been a big hang up of mine for a long time. I mean, coming onto this podcast was me trying to fix it. Just, I had to like force myself to be like, no, do this. This will be really good.
I remember you were telling us when you got cast that you were thinking about not rocking up because you were so
scared. No, I thought like after...
Good on you for doing it.
Thank you. I didn't think I could go through with it, and it was a big thing. It was a big step, like just talking openly about my sexuality and stuff like that. It was very hard, and I am proud of myself for how far I have come and hopefully will continue to go. My family has a history of mental health issues, like with depression. It's something I fear is coming for me, like it's a hereditary thing. I haven't had anything to do with depression at all that I can think of, but it is something that is always in the back of my mind that I worry that it's like coming for me, and it worries me.
At the Babadook.
Yeah, the Babadook. Yeah, that's a good name.
Or like me at a bar at 4 a.m. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess for me, my escape is video gaming. I'm a giant nerd, everyone knows that. Yeah. And it's my chance to kind of like just escape this world and go on adventures in another world, and it just soothes my mind, just can focus on something, and it just really like puts me at ease. Also, something weirdly I've discovered lately, this like YouTube fad called ASMR.
Oh yeah.
I'm so into this now, and it soothes me. Like, it's so ASMR, it's that thing when people like whisper really.
Oh, I learned about this.
And then they make
the
noises and they're
presents.
Like,
yeah.
And then it gives you, so ASMR stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
Right.
So it's when people whisper or like say things make like soft clicking noises. And
now,
things.
Is this related to the South Korean phenomenon of
people eating? That's like a branch of it. It's like a subcategory kind of thing. If you just type into YouTube, it'll blow up. Like, there's so much stuff out there. But I remember first watching as a joke, I'm like, this is so stupid. I'm like, oh, this is actually kind of nice, this is soothing. Like, and I actually just started watching it before I go to bed, and it lulls you into like, it's really good. I recommend it. I discovered
this because of Joe Lycett, who is one of my favorite comedians, who's a bisexual British man. And he was talking about how he watches videos of this woman wrapping presents.
Yeah,
it sounds insane. So I found these videos, and she's got like we're in the fuck this podcast.
It's huge. It's really huge. We should go into ASMR episode where we all just.
And she spends an hour wrapping a box, and she'll lay out her things quite. And she's got these nails on, and she quietly wraps the present. She explains what she's doing. And I started sort of getting it. I didn't realize it had a name.
So it's when someone speaks like that or makes the noises, and certain people react to certain things. Mm. It creates this like prickling on the back of your neck, and like it's like kind of like and there's all different things that cause it.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's like some really random thing, but it's just something I've discovered recently, and I'm actually finding it really helps me just relax.
Kyle's into ASMR.
Yeah. You've got a
kink.
Fuck PNP. You've got ASMR.
Can I just say, I'm really good at doing it too. I will whisper in your ear and I will give you the tingles. Yeah.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So tonight we are joined by the lovely and gorgeous Harry Cook. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, gorgeous. Thank you. Like that.
Oh. Yes. You can stay. Gold. Can replace Luke.
I'm going to live here now.
Great. Yeah. Come join the podcast.
Yeah. We got room. We have a vacancy.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your book.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's come out recently. How long ago did it come out?
Last week, I think.
Last
week.
Yeah. Oh,
Thank you.
So it's a memoir on your life being a contemporary gay man walking through the world.
We're all about that here.
We're all about the contemporary gay man.
Yeah.
You're a really young guy.
I know. Everybody's saying that. Everybody's
like a real young guy.
27 is like kind of stupid to have a memoir. Like, what have you done really? Like 27. I feel like I've had a fair run of things so far. So I think it's kind of a boiling pot of all the sort of fun and heartache that I've had in the last 10 years, I guess.
So, like, what inspired you at this point to write it?
Money. No, totally joking. I'm really broke. And I think it was when I was thinking about writing it. I was looking at like just old journals and stuff. I realized just when I was growing up, there was no young people I remember looking up to who were gay who I could kind of go, oh, they have a happy life, or like they end up having a happy life. Like, you know, when you're growing up and you see like movies and TV shows, I just never saw any of that. The only stuff that I saw was like Angels in America or Philadelphia, and like those stories should be told and stuff, but I was like, I don't really want that life.
Don't resonate with
that. So that's not like just a happy ending. So I kind of wanted to, like,
why do you think it's important for LGBTQIA kids now to hear these stories?
My friend, this is gonna sound really wanky and name
dropping,
but did a movie with Gina Davis, and she's got her own institute. I know, she's pretty cool, but she's got her own institute that's about seeing gender in media and how the more young girls can see themselves in positions on television, like scientists or like mechanics, the more that they feel like they can do it. So I feel like gay kids, if we can get gay kids represented in the media, not that there aren't jobs for like hairdressers and stuff, but if we can give them the jobs of the action heroes as well, or you know, having lives that are a bit more three-dimensional, I just think it's really more healthy.
Because
if you can see it, you can be it, I guess.
Yeah, giving them something to identify with.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Writing a book. I can't even, like, how? Like, how do you do that? Describe your process of that. Like, do you just one day be like, yep, okay, this is good. And then the actual, like, did you have help? Like, how?
No, funnily enough, I wish I did. Yeah. We'll see. People might hate it and be like, this is shit.
I'll let you know in a week.
Yeah. No, I write a lot of journals. Like, I'm like a 13-year-old girl, really. Like,
I've had experience and practice with it. Yeah.
So I think I just sort of like went back through my memories and journals and stuff and just sort of pieced it all together. But writing is harder than I thought it was going to be to actually piece it all together.
Barely write my name.
Yeah. Still up to that. To that bit. And I was like, yeah, no, it's just one step at a time, really, I guess. It took about a year. I had an idea of where I wanted to take it, but then as I worked on it, I guess I got rid of stuff and added stuff and that kind of thing.
Okay, so while writing the book, was there a specific story or like a moment in the book that really like impacted you and you didn't...
Yeah, yeah. There was actually the first chapter of the book is about me. When I grew up in South London in the UK, and my dad and mum once took us shopping. It was like near Christmas. Okay. And they took us to the Disney store.
Amazing.
If you've been to the Disney store, there's like the princess corner, which is so fucking fabulous. It's amazing.
And like, I was that's like, it, I'm gay.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, fucking glitter me up. And there was like, and I went over to the princess corner and I brought back a, it was a Snow White dress. And I said to my dad, I was like, it's Christmas soon. I'd really want this. And he was like, no, you're not a girl, you're a boy. Yeah. Like I wrote that story in the book just as like a...
Wait, hang on a moment.
And then I was looking back and I was like, I think that was the minute that I realized that something shifted. And I was like, oh, so you learn like really early on that, oh, so I'm different, so I'm wrong. Like it was like a, like kids are told immediately and like it's what you tell kids, I think. And we're like, we're so spongy as children.
Absolutely.
So I think that looking back, I was like, yeah, I think that was a minute where I kind of figured out, oh, I'm a bit different.
there it was. Yeah.
And fierce.
You knew what you wanted.
So Harry, you're a writer, an activist and an actor. You're like full triple threat. And as you said before, you worked with Gina Davis when you were like 17.
Yeah.
And lived in Hollywood. How was that? Fucking Gina Davis. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Like, can you touch me? Like, the hand that touched Gina Davis.
No, she's really cool. She's actually like, she's a really cool person. She's not like, there's nothing like superficial about her, which is really cool working with her as like your first movie. You know, like having a big star like that who's decent and not a dickhead. Like it would have sucked if I got someone really mean, like that would put you off Hollywood. But no, she was just really down to earth and really kind of grounded.
You lived in Hollywood?
Yeah. LA for like,
how long were you there for?
3 years, I think. Yeah, it was fun. Have you guys been to
No.
Really?
Not me.
You guys were
saying tonight.
It's
I traveled once and I'm still here.
LA's fun. LA's good town, bit crazy, but
I can imagine.
Whereabouts in like
we lived all over. We actually lived in like the valley, which is, they make like a lot of porn there apparently. So
apparently I've never seen
it. I haven't personally. Maybe no, I'm kidding. No,
starred in any.
I was a participant once. We used to hear like people in the back in like there was like a garage near
garage.
That's where they make porn in Hollywood.
Yeah.
In a garage. Near our place, you used to see and like a cop woman with like bleach blonde hair.
Really? Like, it's like, you look like a classic.
You ready,
individual?
Bitch?
I'm just imagining you as like a 17-year-old hearing this in a garage, like, you're under arrest, daddy. Like,
it's like, oh my gosh, the police are coming to bust next door.
So after that, when you were 22, you came out publicly on YouTube.
Yeah.
Quite apprehensively, because that's something that you would have feared that it would affect your career. Like, what impact do you think that it had, and how do you feel about it now?
That's a good question. Really good question. I was petrified because the majority of advice I got from like studio executives or like big producers and stuff, especially in the States, here as well, but I was working over there, they were saying, oh, it's a career killer. Like, if you come out as gay, nobody will hire you. There's the roles that you will get will be the supporting best friend who's gay, but you have to be extremely camp, you won't be able to play any other, like that, just which just sort of stereotypical roles, which we've all seen a lot of. Because I always thought there was like a massive double standard, because Matt Damon did a thing and he came out and he was like, gay actors should just be quiet. They don't have to come out. They don't have to. Do you remember that? And
I
was like, they should just keep to themselves. Like, they can be private. And I'm like, well, there's a difference though, because you're private, Matt Damon, but you take your wife and your kids to all your premieres. Yeah. Like, I don't get to do that. Like, and I will never get to do that unless I say, oh, by the way, I'm gay. So that's why I did it. But in terms of like work, it really slowed down for a bit. I was lucky. It's slowly starting to pick up again now, thankfully.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was tough for a while. I think a lot of people still have that strange idea that gay people can't play straight, which is funny because I did it all through high school, so I'm really good at it.
Yeah, in previous episodes we've discussed the trend of prominent gay roles are going to straight actors.
Yes.
As a gay actor, do you feel like there's a problem there? Like, what's your take on that?
I do. The thing is, when it comes to like parody of roles, I think it would be different if gay actors were getting straight roles. Then I could kind of see it being fair for straight actors to get gay roles. But we don't get the straight roles. And then we don't even get the gay roles. So you think of the last, like, however many... we literally get no role. There's none left. So, like, all of the last major mainstream movies with, like, LGBT male leads in them, like Brokeback Mountain, Call Me By Your Name, Carol, The Kids Are All Right, even over here, like, The Neighbors, the two guys who are getting married are neighbors, everybody's straight. And that would be fine. That would be totally fine if we were playing, like, Die Hard or, like, you know, like Mad Max, but we don't get those roles. So I think that's where people are getting pissed, because it's like, well, you can't have it both. You can't say gay actors can't play straight, but straight can play gay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just seems a little bit double standard.
Yeah, but that comes back down to the argument where non-trans people are playing trans actors.
Yes!
Like trans roles as well.
Yes!
Like, you can't have it
either way. Yes, my friend.
Like,
exactly.
You need people representing these roles because they can actually bring something to the character that someone who isn't that
can't. And they win Oscars for them.
Yeah. Like, and it's like when we were chatting about Scarlett Johansson playing an Asian character.
Oh, yeah,
right?
The whitewash.
Like, so you went to rehab when you were 19 due to severe battle with alcoholism and addiction. How did you know your addictions were out of control and that you needed help to get your life back?
Yeah. I think it was when... It was a few times. Yeah. I woke up once and I had a gold kimono on, a pack of cigarettes in my underwear, like no t-shirt on, like no, it was just my underwear and a gold kimono.
Okay.
No shoes, like fucking no idea where I'd been, like where my clothes were.
Wow.
And I was like,
how did I get here?
Think I might need to hone it in a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it would be like, I'd wake up and not have any idea where I was all the time. Like it was, and I think it was more, I was really, really struggling with coming to terms with my sexuality. I came out to my parents when I was really young and it didn't go well at all. So I think it was like a coping mechanism for a really long time, getting absolutely hammered and sort of blotting it out. Yeah. So I think that was what sort of pushed me into rehab. It was that or it was one or the other, I think.
Like, how do you think you are like, post rehab now, like how has your life changed since
then? Mess. No, I am a mess. Yeah. I'm worse than ever. No. Life's really, really good. I think I've learned that you can get on with life and you can be happy. You know, I think I was focused so much on getting out of my head when I'm totally cool as I am. I'm really happy lately. Anyway,
yeah, it's amazing.
Lucky.
It's so good.
It's good. We like it when people are happy.
That. Yeah,
happy is good.
Happy is good.
You're legally married in Australia. I think you're actually the first gay married person I've met.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legally. And you fought for the yes vote during the marriage equality plebiscite here in Australia.
Yep.
How do you feel to have your love recognized by the law after fighting for it for so long? Is it what you expected? Like, is it like, different? Like,
no,
what?
It's really, really awesome. Yeah, it was more like, oh, thank fuck, finally. It was like massive relief after
was it
all.
Something that you were just like waiting for with your partner?
And I think
day one.
Yeah, and we got so tired of it. Like that's why we ended up getting married in the States, because we were just like, fuck waiting, fuck this. Like it's just, it was so embarrassing by the end of it. The fact that we were still waiting, everybody else kind of, they'd legalize it somewhere else and move on. And we were just like, nope. not going to happen.
Keep on
shooting crocodile. Like, move on with it. It was so, it just got really boring. It was so cool just to be like, okay, it's done.
Mikey and I actually are in new relationships. Yeah. So we're kind of the experts of the podcast, because the other two losers aren't seeing anyone.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank
you.
Very cool. Together?
No. As an activist during that time, what kind of work did you do? Yeah.
Rallied. I was in like heaps and heaps of rallies in Sydney. I used Twitter like a bitch. Like, I was such a fucking asshole.
I'm horrible on Twitter.
You're one of the first people to tweet me.
Me?
Yeah.
Was it really?
I only recently got it. Yes.
Well, that's my pleasure.
Thank you.
No, that's absolutely fine. Yeah. No, I there's something about Twitter which is really cool. Like, power in numbers does work. I think the more people who scream and shout and do make a bit of a scene, it does get heard, which is totally. Which is cool.
So you're also vocal about outlawing conversion therapy, another topic we've discussed on the show before.
Yes.
How do you see conversion therapy occurring in Australia? Because I know it can be a different approach here compared to the US.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I'm quite ignorant about it over here. I don't know probably as much about it in Australia as the States. But I do know that it does happen, and I think they're sort of, from what I've gathered from the people I've spoken to, they kind of brushing it as a religious program, from what I can gather. They're sort of saying,
differently.
Marketing, pretty much. They're sort of saying, it's like a...
It's a summer camp. Have fun.
It's a summer camp. I think it's just crazy that it's even a thought anymore.
Yeah.
The thought of changing kids is just like, that's just, yeah. just leave the kids alone. It's just so... And especially it's coming from the ones who are apparently so concerned about children. They're so concerned about children, yet they're willing to put them through, electroshock therapy and, complete abusive torture and stuff. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Doesn't add up at all.
Keep on tweeting.
Speaking of kids, now that you're married, would you, is that the next step? Kids, I know you have two beautiful dogs that I stalked on your Instagram.
Well, see, that's...
But, are they your kids? They're your kids.
They're my kids. But the thing is, right, so they're two really beautiful dogs, which we really love. Yeah. And the kid thing sounds interesting.
You stuttered a bit there.
But the thing with kids, right, is if they shit on the carpet, you can't put them outside. You can't put them
debatable.
In... Well, yeah, I was going to say, maybe I could. See, in that case, then I would.
Yeah.
You can't yell at them and be like, you gross, you're gross, stop shitting everywhere. But no, I love kids, but I don't know whether I'm in the near future. I don't know.
We're young, and I. We got time.
Yeah, 27. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We got a while. Yeah.
Are you an uncle?
Yeah, are you a uncle?
I'm an uncle. Exactly. That's what I said. I was like, fine. Yeah. No. I can do the fun stuff. Exactly. I can take them going shopping, and I can take them to the movies and stuff. And then when
they're up on sugar,
and
they just give them back.
Exactly. When they're about to vomit all over you.
Bye bye now.
Head home.
To my apartment where there's no kids.
So much fun.
And I can have a bath and sleep.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh my God.
Letting us just have a chat with you.
Thank you.
If all our listeners look under their chairs, they will not find his book, because get a job. Not everything in this life is free. Get a job. And buy his book, because it's good.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That's okay.
Thanks so much for tuning in, and a huge thank you to Harry Cook for coming in
and having
talk to us about his book, Pink Ink.
Thank you. Don't forget to follow us all at Gaze Revolting on all of our social medias, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And we've also got a Facebook group if you guys want to have a look at that and see all the stuff we like to post in there.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. What an uplifting episode. Lighthearted romp through the...
I tried to bring us back, guys. I was okay.
Yeah, just remember, your community is so important.
Yeah.
I think that's the key thing.
We're here for you.
Oh, and rate and review us.
We're here for you. If you subscribe, rate and review us, then we're here for you. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.